Hey, all you podcast listeners out there. This is Ian from the Futile Podcast. And I'd just like to tell you that we have been nominated in the general category for the Podcast Awards. So please go and vote for us in the general category at podcastawards.com. You could try Googling podcastawards.com. I think it's just podcastawards.com. I don't think there's a www.
What the fuck's a tween?
Tween is in between being, it's in between, it's short from between, it's, instead of a teenager, they're not like a full teenager, and they're not like a little kid. It's the people that like watch the Disney Channel, like Miley Cyrus, Hannah Montana stuff and shit like that, that aren't the creepy, like, pedophiles. Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, we are going to talk about futile things. Mm-hmm. Z-Man, what's up?
I saw some movies recently, and I'd like to talk about that. You, anything you want to talk about first?
What else?
Anything else? Any good new shows?
No, just been watching the Always Sunny episodes. They've been delightful. I haven't seen the last two, but, I mean, by the time this comes out, I've seen up to the shit episode.
So you know all about human meat.
Human meat. I'm familiar with human meat. I'm familiar with how monkeys are nature's humans.
Right.
I'm familiar with how if you have a child, you should name it Murphy, because that was RoboCop's name. Right. I'm familiar that Frank will never... Ever be on that billboard. And that Dennis is just taking the sexiness out of mules 100%.
Right.
So yeah, I found it to be all right.
No longer attracted.
I'd say that it's it might have peaked in season 3 for me. I think to me almost the epitome of when it peaked was in that it was like a two-parter, but it didn't really relate, but it did, because it had to do with them trying to make all that money for the drugs they found,
right.
where they ended up going to the country club and stuff. That, to me, almost seemed like it was the peak of the show, because it was super absurd, super crazy,
right.
But it was still kind of within, like, a zany scenario. Some of the ones they've done this year they've been all right, but I don't know, it's starting to feel a little derivative of itself, which, I mean, maybe I'm giving it too much credit, but season 3, to me, was seriously good. This season's been pretty good.
Season 3 has some really good stuff in it.
I'm going to withhold till I've seen it.
They were really light and brief. I mean, maybe it's because I watched them all on Hulu, but there's something about watching them on FX. It looks, this year, they've been shooting it really dark and grainy. Like, it's almost like watching a snuff film. Like I'm sure they're doing it on purpose, you know, because, like, it's really like you're watching some dark, poorly lit snuff film all the time. And, my gosh, Thursday nights, they make Where Charlie Lives seem like the most despicable cesspit on Earth. It's like the guy from Seven
yes, or something?
It's awful, okay. Dude. It's really, like... Like, there's no way you could have any sort of hope of human happiness if you lived there. But Charlie does it because he's stupid and he's so high on glue and stuff all the time.
Charlie abides.
Yeah, Charlie abides. So I saw High School Musical 3. And,
You were the only one of your age group?
I was the only one of my age group and,
And gender?
And gender over the age of probably 8.
So you were the only creepy old guy there.
I totally felt, you know, if I had pulled up in a windowless van and I was wearing a trench coat, I couldn't have been any more child molestery, I think.
That's terrible.
Yeah, and...
Seth and I were talking about that earlier, but like, he's like, I can't believe you went and saw that. I'm like, you know what? I'll bet when he actually was sitting down watching it, it would really hit him how depressing it was that this was what he decided to watch. Should have seen the cop movie. I know 2.5 hours, but still.
Here's the thing. I got to say, I'll throw this out front. I, despite myself, enjoyed it. I enjoyed the movie. It was an enjoyable experience. It was
delightful.
The nice thing about these Disney-made musicals is that, you know, Sound of Music is a great film, and it's a great musical, but it is boring as hell in between songs. And then through half the songs, it's boring.
Yeah.
It's really boring during half the songs, because some of them are just not that great, and there's not much blocking going on. No. They're standing there. There's one song, which is Julie Andrews and... what's his name?
Plumber.
And it's the whole song is them in silhouette standing by a tree in the moonlight. And they stand there, and the song goes on for 5 minutes. And that's it. And in High School Musical 3, you know, they're moving around. The director of all three of them is this choreographer turned director, Kenny Ortega, who I assume is gay. His name is Kenny. So when you willfully throw your name out there as Kenny as a director, because most of them use their full
Kenneth. Kenneth would guarantee he's gay.
No, well, not if it was Kenneth L. Ortega or something like that, or Kenneth Ruiz Ortega, or like, you know, draw it out to the full thing, and then you're like, oh, this guy's, you know, it's
he's got self respect.
Yeah. Oh, maybe on the side he's an Ecuadorian novelist or something, you know.
Mm.
But no, it's Kenny Ortega, which means he's a flaming homosexual. I assume.
Because he's a choreographer.
Yeah, just an assumption.
What about Wade Robinson?
I don't know what that means.
Wasn't he with the Wade Robinson Project on MTV where they did a choreography? He did all the Britney Spears choreography. Don't you remember that TV show?
No, not at all.
A few years ago with Boogie?
Mm.
Really?
No, not really. And during any musical, you're getting the inkling that everyone who's involved in the project is gay. Musical or dance.
Because it's like very theatrical.
I take it for granted at this point that every single person in Fame was gay. Every single person, which is not true. But while you're watching it, there's no way to believe otherwise. Grease, they're all gay, you know? I mean, Travolta's pretty much gay. We've kind of almost, burned him out of the woods at this point.
Chased him with your pitchforks and your torches?
I know. I like how I'm using myself as the person who's chasing gay people out of things. So there are moments, and specifically through the first half or so of any sort of musical you're watching, especially in the theater, where your skin is crawling, because not awkwardness with anyone else there. A few times I did think, I wonder if anyone's going to look over and notice that they're in the corner. There's a 28-year-old guy who's bearded and
stocky. Let's say stocky
and balding and looking around at them.
Beady-eyed. Like, let's say beady-eyed.
Well, what else can we say to make myself
Statham-esque?
Sound unflattering. No.
Looking around, digging up turnips.
So, and I didn't really take a good look at anyone else who was in there. I honestly didn't really care. I kind of avoided all eye
contact. But the skin crawling factor is just because it's a musical, and it's just so absurd.
And you have to learn to suspend disbelief very quickly in a musical. That's really one of the greatest movie genres that really fit into that suspend your disbelief thing is musicals, because it's
completely, they're
very, like, if you watch a West Side Story, it's obviously a set. Everything is very brightly lit, and there's cardboard backgrounds and
Singing in the Rain.
And there's a bunch of dudes out there dancing like really really, and they got leather jackets on.
Seven brides for seven brothers.
Yeah, all that junk.
Yeah,
Brigadoon, whatever. And though, I mean, then you get to a certain point where it just becomes entertaining, and if it's a decent one,
a good show with a good story, I haven't
seen, the disclaimer is I have not seen High School Musical 1 or 2. I figured I was safe seeing 3 because I was sure that no one was going to die in the first two. They weren't going to kill anyone off, and I wasn't going to have to figure out
why is Edward 2?
Why does he want revenge?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Why does this guy want revenge? I don't know. Oh, they killed his brother.
Mm.
So basically, it starts with I gotta say it was decently directed, this thing, but it starts with a dripping wet, sweaty Zac Efron's face in slow motion, staring up into the camera, and he looks back at the shot clock. It's winding down.
Oh, he's about to shoot a free throw.
And he screams, "Let's go!" to the camera, right? Mm-hmm. And then it goes into the game, and they're losing at halftime, and then all of a sudden it goes into his dad, which is the coach, I guess, comes in at halftime and goes, "You guys suck, you know," or something.
"We got to pick it up."
Or vice versa. Yeah, he says something like, "You guys are better than this, you know, seniors, you take over," which is Troy. Troy is Zac Efron and his buddy Chad, which is Corbin Blue.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "All right, guys, you heard the coach, let's go, yeah." And they go out there, and then there's a gay song, right? Then there's a gay song while they're playing basketball, because that's how musicals go.
Okay.
And so during that moment, I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is just deplorable." You know, like, yeah. I can't stand watching this.
Uh-huh.
I almost physically couldn't stand watching.
Uh-huh.
And so then, soon after, I got, like, the next one was a little less unbearable and a little less. And then by the time that people were, like, jumping out of trees and dancing on rooftops and junk, I was like, "Hey, man."
So it sounds like what they did is they did sort of, I don't know, I'm sure I could develop a term for this methodology, but they hit you hard, Then they hit you soft for a while, and you're like, oh, this isn't so bad.
And then
bad.
The next time they hit you hard,
back, then you're like, oh, you're like, used
wow, to it. I'm glad they hit me hard again. The songwriting wasn't that great. The choreography was very good. This guy is a good choreographer. Considering that these are mostly, they're not kids anymore. Most of these people are now in their early 20s or late teens.
Okay.
But they were, you know, mid-teens, early teens when they started. So it's got good choreography for that sort of thing, and I think that they're talented and able to pull that stuff off.
So the plot was the thing you were saying. This actually has
a reasonable plot.
No, it doesn't have a reasonable plot. It's just the same old thing.
It's worse than Sound of Music, because Sound of Music, you said, is really boring in between.
In parts.
This has got basketball, has a good story, right?
Yeah.
Is the basketball as good as, say, Teen Wolf in terms of its like
close
resilience?
No, and after the very beginning, there is no basketball in it because it's unimportant. The whole thing is about them and their lives and moving on to college and.
So is this the final one?
It's the last one with them in it. I don't know. They talk about keep the franchise going with the side.
Why don't they just do the Saved by the Bell thing and bring them over?
Class.
And then
the new
do,
class.
Instead of doing new class, do college years.
College years, because I think that most of the actors now want to move on to being, you know, something more than a Tiger Beat person.
Oh.
Zac Efron's, he had a trailer before the thing for some movie he's in called 17 again, where he plays...
Like a guy with a switchblade?
No, a guy who dies and I guess comes back as a 17-year-old and has a chance to reconnect with his family or something like that. And it looks like a comedic thing where he just repeatedly takes his shirt off.
That's pretty
which
stupid.
Which is, I guess, what his demographic wants, you know.
Huh.
But, we'll have to confess. But about him, he's a good actor. He really is... A very intense performer. He's got a good voice. His dancing was a little gay at times, like all of theirs was. And but he's an electric performer and he's an electric performer and he's really
You think he's an up and coming guy? You see him doing
real
stuff at some point.
I think he's LaBeoufian and without the ego at this point.
Oh wow!
At this point. Because in interviews, he's been very gracious and happy that he's even, you know...
Well, LaBeouf was that way first, too.
No. LaBeouf was always just...
Kind of jokey and...
Jocular and sarcastic. And he's admitted at this point that early on, he never wanted to do it for fun or something like that. He did it for money. He said that at the age of, 11. I mean, Shia LaBeouf's story about how he got into show business was... I know this from Ellen. Kristen was watching it with me. That he was surfing.
This is straight from the buff's mouth, then?
Yeah. He was surfing with some kid, and the kid had all this stuff and nice shoes, and he's like, wow, how'd you get all that? He's like, oh, I was in a commercial, you know, I got all this money. And so he's like, oh, great. So he went and he called an agent. He was 11 years old, and he pretended that he was a 30-year-old man, which the agent didn't buy, and told him that he's got this kid that he's going to see. And the agent was like, well, that's, you know, that was pretty ballsy of you, and basically had him come in and do a reading and sign him for something, right away. It was entertaining. It was entertaining. I gotta say,
I have to confess.
After it all,
that I actually do enjoy musicals sometimes. Yeah. I don't seek them out, but if I'm stuck watching one, I've seen two. One was a city college or community college musical of Anything Goes, Cole Porter.
Okay, right.
And one was a high school musical.
Mm-hmm.
No pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
Get it? Because we're... Yeah.
Right.
Of Oklahoma. And I actually enjoyed both of them. And
Oklahoma's
I like West Side Story.
Mm-hmm.
Singing in the Rain's pretty good.
I love that one. That's my favorite
but
one.
That one's good. See, to me, that one's got an extra level of enjoyment because it's about the emergence of sound in cinema.
Right. Yeah, it's really funny. It's got
it's really good. And it doesn't...
Gene Kelly was a great... Yeah, he was great in everything.
I think for me, it's more that, like you said, that there's got to be an interesting story.
Yeah.
And in all of those, there's an interesting thing going on. I mean, I like airships, and I like trains, and so, Cole, you know, Anything Goes, it's on an old steamer. And that's kind of like the pre-airship airship, you know? It's a ship, no air, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's all kinds of hijinks going on in there, and there's, you know, there's multiple storylines and things. And it's kind of fun just to watch it all unfold, and, you know, the singing and whatnot, but... I don't know, it seems to work. I seem to enjoy it. I think, I don't know, it sounds is this just an excuse? What's so popular about this? Is it really just a high school drama, like generic Saved by the Bell kind of TV show?
No, you know, it's weird storyline. That it doesn't, it's super like G-rated Disney stuff. It's completely sexless and completely
is there without, romantic interest?
There is romantic interest. It's between Efren and Hudgens, which is his Vanessa Hudgens, which is his real girlfriend in real life.
Oh, wow.
They're moving in together or something like that. So you know, they have palpable chemistry and all that stuff, but they kissed at the end of the second movie, I guess. That was the big payoff, like this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then they have like a tiny little like three-pronged attack kiss in like the middle-ish of it, I guess.
A clever girl approach sort of thing.
Sure, yeah.
Well, there were three of them, right?
Yeah. And you know, the whole kind of tension in there is about how she's... The whole thing is set in Albuquerque, East High in Albuquerque. That's where the whole series has been set.
New Mexico?
Yeah. And so she gets...
Is it just completely irrelevant? Do they ever go out of the desert?
No. I mean, it's a city. It's a big city, Albuquerque.
I know. I don't doubt that. Yeah, it's just that, like, you know, there's no ocean, so there's no ocean scene.
They have the second one set in, like, a country club.
Weird.
They've got...
Well, I always took the pretense for it was, like, a high school drama comedy, but they're trying to put on a musical play in the high school. Am I wrong?
That's what the first one was about. The second one is about another big performance.
But it has to do with a country club?
Yeah, because it's in the summer.
It's like Saved by the Bell summer class with King of Queens' wife.
Right.
Got it.
Right.
Got it.
And then the third one is their senior year, and there's one last big show they want to put on. No one wants to do it. But the Vanessa Hudgens girl convinces everyone to do it.
And then Coogan shows up and he has a play idea for him. No.
So anyway, Efren wants to go to, or his dad and everyone else wants him to go to the Albuquerque University and play for the basketball team there. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't know if he wants to do that. He's got an offer from Juilliard, you know, because he's a fantastic stage performer as
well. He's got
to
choose.
She's going off to be a brainiac in Stanford.
Oh, okay.
And that's where the tension comes from, because he doesn't know what to do.
Well,
she doesn't know what to do, and she feels like she needs to for her future, but they're deeply in love, you know?
Oh, yeah, of course. People in high school seem to think they are.
Yeah. And that's the basic, you know, drama there.
And so then the drama's resolved, because she's like, oh, yeah, Stanford, I should go to Stanford. And he's like, oh, yeah, I should go to the one that's prestigious, because if I screw my knee up, I can still make a living doing that.
Well, I'm not going to give anything away, but...
Okay, good point.
But he finds a way to do both.
Oh, he does? He finds a way to do everything?
He finds an unheralded third option.
He goes to the Stanford Theater Department and plays basketball for them?
Close.
And then they get to live together happily ever after? Oh.
Which is exactly, according to him, 32.7 miles away from Stanford, which is true, I believe. So.
Wow.
Just
enough for her to decide to surprise him some Friday night when he's having too many beers.
Plenty of booty calls.
Busting a major nut inside of some, you know, other co-ed, right?
I suppose
that'll be the fourth
one. Though that would never be insinuated in this fine, upstanding Disney film.
It sounds almost too sterile. Like, these characters are so plastic that there's no point in it.
You know,
like, they might as well have done it with, like, Fisher-Price figurines.
The,
stop motion.
Have you ever watched a Disney sitcom?
I've seen a few bits of some of those.
The Sweet Life of Zach and Cody.
Well, who are never in that, though, right? Zach and Cody are never in that show. It's always the blonde chick,
who's the bad guy in the whole High School Musical series.
And they're always the two that are sitting there, and then there's the bellhop, and he's all uptight.
Yeah.
And then it's like, where's Zach and Cody?
Oh, they pop in.
Make with Zach and Cody.
They got all kind of fat and unattractive.
Yeah, well, of course, yeah.
They got a new series. They've moved on. Now they're on a cruise ship.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, they've moved it up a notch.
It's basically just, hey, we get six different kinds of influenza every year.
Yeah, right.
Zach and Cody get influenza and are bedridden.
Mm-hmm. And then let's see what everyone else is doing instead. That's the whole plot, right? So it follows that. I mean, it's the same sort of humor in that, except for it's a film. It's done all big, and the humor is generally more subtle. There's no stupid pratfalls and junk. I mean, Efron's acting is good enough that he's able to kind of pull off the dumb lines he has. Some of the other ones are not so fortunate.
He pretty much carries this thing on his back, like Atlas.
Mostly, yeah. I would say so. I mean, that Corbin Blue guy is decent. He's the one with the big poofy hair.
Yeah,
ringlets,
yeah.
No, I know. And then...
he looks like Abdul Hakim from episode 2 of Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah, kind of, nice. Yeah. And Vanessa Hudgens, honestly, is the weakest of the entire group.
I would think so.
She's very bland. She's almost like Jennifer Lopez or something to me. Ooh. Extremely bland. And there's Sharpay, which is... what's her name? Ashley Tisdale.
Uh-huh.
And her fraternal twin brother, Ryan Evans. And he's the choreographer. And here's the thing. Here's the weird thing where Disney goes with this. This kid is obviously gay.
Okay.
He's a flaming choreographer in the series.
Yeah.
Yet they continually give him, like...
A beard.
No. Female love interest type things where he's like, hey, I really want to take that girl to the prom. His sister's like, no, you got to worry about making me a big star. And he's like, ah, darn, I wanted to take her to the prom. But he's like uh-huh. flopping around, limp-wristed, and during the musical performances, like he doesn't talk gay. He doesn't speak with a gay
with a
intonation or anything like that. Yeah, yeah, it's nothing yeah. overtly, mm-hmm. you know.
Okay.
And I felt like if Disney was trying to make it so there's a wide range of characters and they've got some kid who's obviously a latent homosexual, then they would be fine doing that and not outing him or eating him or anything like that. But now it seems like they're like in this third one, which I'm just assuming doesn't happen.
They're actively saying this is not okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like they're suddenly taking a stance and mm-hmm. saying, you know, that kid that we kind of hinted was gay the whole time, we'll give him a girlfriend.
We'll give him a girlfriend so that way, you know,
But his performances when it comes to singing and stuff are the most, like, it's like Liza Minnelli. It's totally, it's really off the wall. Like, this kid is playing to the back seats.
Oh my gosh. You
know, pretty much. And, I don't know if the actor is gay or not in real life, too. I mean, sometimes you don't find that stuff out on the internet.
It's too bad.
Yeah,
everyone's personal life should be on the internet.
Yeah, too bad, too bad. So overall, I was surprised that I moderately enjoyed the movie.
So were you giving it a higher rating than you would a normal movie because
it's going to be. I'm probably going to give it a right in the middle rating, which is way higher than I expected.
3 out of 5 kind of thing.
At the highest, a 3 out of 5,
maybe
probably
2.5.
Yeah.
Okay.
And for that, I think that's successful for me because I expected way less. Sing in the Rain. By comparison, I'd probably give like a 4.5 out of 5 or something like that. I think it's pristine filmmaking.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And it was one of the last big studio MGM gigantic
Lion Roar. Yeah,
like it was one of those last big ones before the whole studio system crashed on itself and the independent thing came roaring up in the 60s
really?
And 70s. It was that was
late?
One of the ones that led.
I didn't know it was that late.
Well, it was early 60s, I think. It was
okay,
and it was one
studio
of the last...
system didn't really collapse.
Well, no,
in the
but
late
but that was the,
70s.
The one of the big last ones that led to the whole.
Mm.
From there, they just kind of like fell off the edge because they just went over the top. Everyone tried to get to the Singing in the Rain level, and it wasn't possible.
Showmanship.
Yeah. So I don't know. Overall, musicals are really pretty annoying, but I end up liking like the ones that you're supposed to like. If you watch them and you sit there and appreciate them for what they are, they really are.
It just comes down to character in the end, you know. If they're interesting characters,
yeah. I really like the old Fred Astaire ones. You ever watch those? Like a lot of them are black and white, stuff mm-hmm. like that. It's because and Bing Crosby and Bob Hope type things.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are good, especially the Fred Astaire's because. He was a phenomenal dancer. His singing was really lackluster. He just kind of mumbled his way through the things. But he was really sarcastic and funny. He had a lot of good little jokes in there. Like, his characters were always, like, this dapper, like, sarcastic, like, drinking on the sly guy in a coat and tails and went around and, you know, moonlit with all the old silver foxes. And
Gene Kelly was sort of, by comparison, sort of like the blue-collar version.
He was more blue-collar. Yeah. He was always really exuberant and outgoing.
And he was like, what, American in Paris and stuff
right. Yeah. And Gene Kelly, man, that dude was a man's man. I don't know if you ever read stuff about him, but he fought so hard to erase the idea that because some guy dances, it's taken as like an effeminate thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And he tried his whole career, his whole life was
well. He
was
did like
based on
crazy
the
acrobatic stuff, like wire work stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Now he's running up walls and flipping upside down and stuff.
The point of his life, pretty much, was to show people that the dancing could be a manly thing.
Yeah,
that's what his whole like he said it I think a few times, and I think he was He was discouraged by the time he died because I think he was the only person who came across that way, and no one else really attempted to.
You mean you feel like that he was like homophobic?
He might have been a little homophobic,
and so he had a problem with that aspect of it.
Yeah, and I don't think he liked the idea that anyone thought he might possibly be gay.
Mm.
So I don't know.
Whatever.
Other people just don't care, and then other ones are gay and they don't tell you, and then other ones are gay and they tell you, and then they never work in Hollywood again. Not anymore, but I mean, no one wants to really pay to see gay actors is the problem. So Hollywood doesn't care, but the people who buy the tickets care.
Yeah, still. Those people that didn't watch Ellen's show, but then watch Ellen's show.
No, people love Ellen's show, but that's different than if Rupert Everett suddenly gets to be James Bond.
I guess.
Like he wanted to, you know? No one would pay to see that, except for people who wanted to laugh at Rupert Everett playing James Bond, gay James Bond.
I think that does start to get into that realm of when people are really acting, they're completely pretending to be something that they're absolutely not. I mean, you get into sexuality and you get into, like, ethnicities. I think that's where people start to have problems with it, you know? It's like, if you get a white man to play a black character, right. You know? You're not going to get you're going to cast a white guy to play Martin Luther King and put him in blackface. I mean, the idea of acting is that you're pretending to be somebody else, right. But at a certain point, it's kind of, the line doesn't really even blur. It's just kind of like, you're either, you fit the type or you don't, you know?
Well, for the same, what you're talking about there, like, it's one of the same reasons why people don't feel threatened by light-skinned black actors. Halle Berry has very white features. And she's got light.
Well, that's a racism, though. That's not a typecasting looking.
It's
for
not a typecasting
role,
thing, but she can't play a very urban black woman because she has very white features.
But she did in that one with Martin Landau, right?
Oh, Baps.
Yeah.
No one saw it.
I saw it.
Well,
no, I saw part of
you
it.
You saw it in theater?
No. Yeah, okay. Twice.
No, you didn't.
No.
You know, Will Smith is a very white featured. Medium to lighter skinned black guy. He doesn't ever play a super urban. You know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It was like a guy pretending that he's gangsterish. He was never even gangsterish. He was just kind of like.
Didn't you have like Bill Cosby in the Cosby Show? It was a really popular show.
Yeah,
when he was on in the 80s.
You know, very not the culture wasn't white at all. In fact, I think they did a really good job of showing an upper class black family that wasn't like. A white family that happens to be black, like a lot of shows try to do.
Okay.
But at the same time, they were criticized as well because they had, it was a successful black family and it wasn't showing any sort of like inner
city. It wasn't like Good Times or something like exactly, that where it showed the struggles and the pains and the sorrows and whatnot. I mean, I guess that's sort of an unfortunate thing is that in order to be authentic to your culture, you have to sort of convey these stereotypes.
Right.
But then if you do them, sometimes then you're playing to them. It's,
right.
And it's kind of a no-win scenario, it seems. You know?
Push the little daisies and make them come up. Push the little daisies and make them come up. Push the little daisies and make them come up. Watch the little daisy grow. Little daisy grow. Push the little daisies and make them come up. Watch them grow. Watch them grow. As I push the little daisy and make them come up. Make them come up. Make them come up. Make them come up. Say, push the little daisy.
There's a ladies' man.
Indeed. Anywho.
So is Don Knotts.
Oh, gosh. I'm Don Knotts. Here it comes.
I think he was married to, like, a playmate.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Don Knotts was the man. Anyway.
He was part of the Apple Dumpling Gang. You can't knock that shit.
With Tim Conway.
Him and Dwarf.
And freaking Slim Pickens.
Slim.
Was part of the... The real gang. I just can't remember what they were called anymore, but wow, we've digressed all the way to the Apple Dumpling Gang.
It always comes back to the Apple Dumpling Gang, if you ask me.
It has to.